This is HPR episode 1982 entitled, What's in My Virtual Bag, and is part of the series, What's in My Toolkit. It is hosted by Nacho Jordi, and is about 29 minutes long. The summary is, the usual programs I use every day in my system.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hi everyone, this is Nacho Jordi, one more time, broadcasting for Hacker Public Radio. This is my second installment. I can't believe I made it here. I'm very happy. And I'm recording in better technical conditions than the previous time, with a mixer and an SM58 and all that jazz. So I'm going to cover an issue that is a classic for Hacker Public Radio beginners. It seems it's describing my system, what's in my bag. In this case, it's my virtual bag, because the real one, it's always a bit embarrassing for me. I think there's something in my family of the Diogenes syndrome, and we tend to accumulate too much stuff. And looking at my bags in the open for public can be a bit embarrassing. In computers, maybe it's the same thing, but as it is more hidden, it's like you can get away with it better, I guess. So what's in my virtual bag? There's a couple of unpopular choices there, I guess, but it only comes to prove the power of Linux, the plurality of choices you get in Linux. To begin with, my operative system, my distro of choice, is Puppy Linux. I have a few, as I commented in my previous podcast, I have a few scattered experiences with other distros, but first, because of need, because my former computer was so humble and so little, I settled in Puppy. And then as I upgraded my gear, I stuck to Puppy. I tried other things. I had an experience with Lubuntu, for example, because I had a problem with an audio program, and I thought Lubuntu, someone told me in a forum that Lubuntu could be the solution. But I didn't like the experience. It was a bit Windows-like to me. I mean, if I wanted my computer, when I power off, to give me a message saying, waiting for updates are being downloaded and stuff, and the computer switching off when it wants to, if I wanted that, I would have stayed in Windows XP or 7. I'd like my computer to obey me. So from the point of view of user experience, I didn't like Lubuntu, besides the fact that you have to log in as root, and I've grown used to this peculiarity of Puppy Linux that a lot of people don't like or feel afraid. It's that it runs as root by default. I really like it, and when I try other distros, I find a continuous drag and very annoying to have to continually sudo to do anything I want to do. Maybe I'm not too conscious of security risks and I need something terrible for me to happen, but I have this idea. I don't know if it's true or not, but I feel like I'm a very too small fish in the pond and nothing can happen to me. And also the Puppy Linux community, very often assure that there isn't any problem with running as root in Puppy due to the way it works. Honestly, I've tried to get my head around that documentation and I have never been able, but I trust my community. It's one of the best forums in the world that I've tried. Very friendly, very helpful people. So I guess there's a bit of convenience in my trust toward them, because I'm really settled in my ways with Puppy Linux. Everything is at one or two clicks of distance, and I haven't ever found anything that comes close to usability in 29 seconds. I'm browsing the web, I'm not saying Puppy Linux is for everyone, but certainly I like the a lot of people when I tell them I use Puppy Linux, they feel like it's very Spartan, you know, like, oh, Puppy Linux, you use that. But to me it's the contrary. I find other distros bloated with too much stuff, too much graphics. I want to get to the point when I want to do something, and Puppy Linux lets me do that. It's infinitely customizable, and it has a horrible look and feel as you download it, because the Puppy Linux community, I have a feel that they don't have a lot of graphic designers. But if you don't care about that stuff, it's a distro that really helps you get things done, at least in my case, for my needs. I don't know for other people. For document management and recording stuff with Audacity or DAW, that kind of things, which are my main activities, it's absolutely great. The thing that it's so small that it can run easily in RAM, and it makes it super fast, and you can configure a cache space if you want, but for most of needs you don't need to. So these are a few of the features of Puppy Linux. Maybe I'm talking too much about this. Maybe it's a good material for a new podcast. So I'll move on and speak the omnipresent window manager. In my case, after trying most of them, maybe all of them, because it's always funny to try window managers and file managers too, I settled for good a few years ago with Rat Poison. It's a tiled window manager. Again, it's not for everybody, but their sales proposition, so to speak, really convinced me. The thing that all that maximizing windows and moving windows around is not productive. You're not creating value when you're doing that, and if you add how many hours in your life takes that, it amounts to a lot of time at the end of the year. With a tiling manager, I also try DWM, Dynamic Window Manager, first. And I think, in fact, Dynamic Window Manager also allows, being a tiling window manager also allows you to drag windows and maximize on the other style. But I found in Rat Poison everything I need. It's customizable to incredible extremes and in a very easy way. It's just a text file you modify. The syntax is a bit tricky until you get it, but you always have handy the link to the official website where all the commands are explained. And a long time I've customized it to get the things I like from another window managers. For example, I by pressing function key and then space, I get a mosaic. It's an add-on that you can get from the community. I call it mosaic. I don't know if that's the exact term. It seems like what in iOS is called expose or expose. It divides the screen equally, showing all the programs you have active. And also I have two modes with it. I configured one, it just shows all the windows in the screen, and then you navigate to the one you want. And other gives you each window comes with a key that you can press to move to that window. Also, another add-on that you can use after some time of being using the usual window navigation, I added a program bar at the bottom, in the style of more traditional window managers. It's also a great addition because in that regard, it's always great to have in sight what's the everything that you have open in the computer. Otherwise, sometimes you can open a program twice and that kind of stuff. What else? Also, another configuration I've done is using the BIM navigation keys. I've got used to them and I use them whenever I can. I think in an ideal world, they should become a standard for all the programs, because it's a way to very efficient way of moving along from typing stuff to moving a cursor in the screen without taking your fingers away from the screen. By the way, Rat Poison, I guess everybody knows, but it's called like that because it intends to be anti mouse. Even the documentation is written in an ironic way against mice, which is all well and good, except for one thing, that some programs are not keyboard friendly, are more mouse friendly. And Rat Poison sometimes gives problems with programs complex and with a lot of windows like GIMP. But also, and I think great thing Rat Poison allows is that you can leave it and move to a different window manager and then come back as if nothing happened. So it allows a lot of flexibility. So Rat Poison, my configuration of Rat Poison, I could write books about it because it's very... You always have this, what if, and you can try it in minutes, this idea to navigate through my files. If it doesn't work, it's okay. It didn't take you long. Okay, moving on, another staple of my system would be Vim, the text editor that everybody in the Linux community mostly know, and its nemesis, Emacs. I never felt too attached to Vim in that rivalry. I chose Vim just by chance. I was looking for an advanced text editor and said, hey, I'm going to try Vim first. Maybe if I had said, hey, I'm going to try Emacs first, I would be using Emacs now. I mean, I haven't tried Emacs. It seems it's a bit difficult to configure and to set up, and I don't have that kind of time right now. But well, again, to me, it's a proof that the amount of possibilities and the of people and stuff that you have in the Linux community. So I use Vim and I use it mostly for everything. When I open my computer, the first thing that pops out is a Vim screen with the VimX extension. I use Vim as a file manager. VimX stands for Vim Explorer, and most of the time you can do everything you want with VimX. When I have to do something graphical, on the contrary, I use RocksFiler, which is the file manager that comes with Puppy Linux. And also I use Vim for as an outliner with another extension that is called TVO, the Vim Outliner. And I've got so used to using the Vim Outliner that in fact whenever I create a text file, I do it with a .otl extension, which is outline extension, and it's the extension the Vim Outliner uses. When you open a .otl file, Vim starts applying the rules of the outliner to the text file, and it gives a different color to the lines depending on their tabbing. You can fold and unfold. There's an option also called haste, in which you can go to a sub branch of a file and edit it separately. In my computer, it stopped working for some reason, but I don't know why. At some point broke, but I use it for a long time. So that's how much I'm happy with my Vim Outliner and Vim in general. You can do most of everything there. You can split the screen, you can get tabs. It's endless what you can do with Vim. Another essential piece of equipment for any computer user in the 21st century is the web browser. In my case, it's also an unpopular choice. SeaMonkey. I don't know SeaMonkey. I never known exactly the story. What's the story with SeaMonkey? I know it has some kind of indirect relation with Firefox. It's both are created by Mozilla. And in my view, SeaMonkey gets a bit of a bad rap, and it's some people mock at it, and a lot of people don't like it or find it too unconventional. In my case, again, I started using it by chance because it shipped with Puppy Linux. And a long time I get to very customized. What I like about it mostly are a couple of things. One of them is that you can take all the menus and options garbage out of your site very not very easily. You have to do a lot of tweaking when you install the browser, but the final result is that you get menus reduced to two lines of text on top. That's, to me, it's a selling point, because the rest of the screen is content. You don't need that kind of visual noise. That's visual noise when you have to have all the stuff all the time in front of your face, in addition to what you are trying to investigate. And another thing very peculiar and very friendly for me of the SeaMonkey interface is that it only has one text field to both for writing URLs or terms you want to search in a search engine. The way I see it is that computers are made to automate things for us. Otherwise, what's the point of using them? So I don't get it why most of web browsers have two text fields for that, occupying the double of screen real estate. One when you want to type a URL, and other when you want to write search terms. Even to make things more absurd, in Firefox, I think you can configure it so the text field where you write URLs can also accept search terms, but you cannot remove the other the search term fields, so it becomes useless and stupid, and you don't get that kind of garbage filling your computer screen with CMonkey. CMonkey gets out of the way and then leaves me alone with my content. And to me, that's a selling point. Maybe the only way I could abandon CMonkey is if I could make work some of the web browsers that work with WinKey navigations. Again, I love WinKey navigations. I think they should be in a perfect world, they should be a standard for navigating in computers with the keyboard, because it's a very efficient way of changing between typing text and moving a cursor around. And speaking of Beam, another recent addition to my system, it was kind of accidental. So one day I discovered that I had it installed in the computer. I don't know if it shipped with my Puppy Linux version or just I installed it somehow when I was doing something else in those times when I didn't document things. So I found that I have a GBeam installed. GBeam stands for Graphic Beam, and it's simply a Vim version that doesn't run in a terminal but in a graphic environment. I've been using it in the first moments. I thought it was like a redundancy, that something that I didn't need and I kinda didn't like, because using a graphic environment is like less geek than using the terminal. But I've been using it more and more because my Beam regular version sometimes does funny stuff with copy and paste. When you want to copy, for example, some text you grabbed from a website and you want to put it in a text document in Beam, it's one of those annoying situations that sometimes works and sometimes don't. And I find that kind of inconsistency the worst of the options. I prefer it not to work. I prefer it to not work all of the time. Then you know what to expect. But this kind of thing that sometimes work and sometimes don't, it's like they drive you crazy. So with GBeam allows better mouse and copy paste options, and also the graphical interface, it's easier to configure when you want to change colors and fonts. So I think I'll probably be progressively moving to GBeam, because another thing great that I love of GBeam and that makes it very easy the transition is that both Beam and GBeam share the same BeamRC configuration file, so any change you make in your configuration applies to both programs. And also in GBeam, without any hassle, I found I have the outliner and the file explorer and everything. So I think I'll be moving more and more to just GBeam instead of Vim. And another piece of equipment that is very essential, and we all have ours of choice, of course, is a terminal emulator. The one I used from a long time ago is Sakura. To be fair, I also use RxVT, which is, I find it a bit limited, but I use it for certain activities only because it's graphically different. Because that's the main hurdle I found when I was choosing a terminal emulator. First of all, I have to say that I went on terminal shopping, let's say, a short time ago, and I got a bit surprised by the lack of options. There were plenty, of course, but considering that it's a kind of program that is original from the Unix time in the 70s. I thought there would be like millions and millions and millions. And there were only thousands and thousands and thousands. So Also, well, this my choice was limited to what I was able to install, or even to what I was able to what I was able to understand the documentation. Sometimes, which I not always proficient at that stuff. So, anyway, I tried a few of them and settled in Sakura because it's almost perfect. The perfection for me is that it allows tabs browsing. You can configure a font, you get the transparency, a percentage you want. You can also set a background for the terminal, background image you prefer. But in my view, it lacks something that it would be essential for me. And I haven't, to be fair, I haven't either found it in the other terminal emulators. And I'd like to configure easily the background color of the terminal I'm using, and do it separately for any instance I run of the terminal emulator. Why? Because this would allow it would make very easy to differentiate in which file you are working on. You could say like, okay, the red one, I'll use it for the original file, and the blue one I'll use it for the copy, and that way it's impossible to make a mistake. And sometimes when I had a lot of text files open, it's easy to make a mistake and edit something that you didn't intend. And well, this thing in Sakura cannot be done. The ideal way to do it would be doing it through terminal. That you could, it would be great if you could open a Sakura terminal with a command dash color blue or dash color orange, and then you get the terminal in the color you want. Sakura doesn't have that possibility to change the background color. You can do it, but you have to do it once Sakura is open, you do right click and you change the color, and it doesn't affect the terminal immediately, but you have to close Sakura and then open it again, which makes it very difficult for this purpose I intended of having the colors showing which file you are working on. So when a project I've been toying with around was creating some kind of wrapper command to do this, but I still don't know how to do it, to be honest, because you have to work on modify the Sakura configuration file, which is a bit difficult to read for me, too much hexadecimal stuff, and it makes me a bit nervous tweaking around the Sakura configuration file. It's not I think it's a program that it's conceived to be modified graphically to be very friendly for the end user that is using a mouse and clicking around, but I don't think it would tolerate well this kind of modification. I don't know if it can be done, but anyway, it's a small annoyance in a terminal emulator that is very powerful. And now you see it everywhere. Also, this thing about the colors presents problems with Vim's color schemes. There are like weird interactions, and some files look a bit too colorful for my taste. But well, it's a minimum. It isn't a disruption of your workflow. It's just something I think I'll get at some point. My learning curve will be able to do that, so great. So that's it. That's in brief what's my basics in my VirtualBox. I hope you enjoyed this podcast, and thank you very much for listening, and have a great day. Bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hecka Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.